Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, January 28th. Oil and gas. Biden's leasing plan threatens jobs, tax revenue. There are better ways to address climate change, leaders say. The story was written by Miller McEwen. Energy industry associations unanimously support the Biden administration's efforts to combat climate change. But last week's executive order placing a 60-day moratorium on new drilling permits on federal lands and Wednesday's order placing a moratorium on oil and gas leasing on federal lands are not the answer, they insist. Quote, "We share President Biden's goal for addressing climate change," said Mike Summers, president and chief executive officer of the American Petroleum Institute. But, he said during a media call that included associations representing states that would be impacted by the moratoriums, the president's actions represent a step backwards, not only for the nation's economic recovery, but environmental progress. He said he feared the decision is the first step toward a policy of banning oil and natural gas development on federal lands and waters. That would lead to increased oil imports, more emissions from the power sector as the transition from coal to cleaner natural gas is slowed, an estimated 55% increase in carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 as coal use rises an estimated 15%, the API said. In addition, he said it would also cost nearly 1 million jobs by 2022 and put $9 billion in government revenue at risk. New Mexico would be particularly hard hit, said Ryan Flynn, president of the New Mexico Oil and Gas Association. He told the media participating in the call that New Mexico accounts for 57% of federal onshore production and 31% of onshore natural gas production. A ban is projected to cost the state 62,000 jobs and put over $1 billion in revenues derived from oil and gas development on federal lands that goes to the state schools at risk. Flynn pointed out that the industry recognizes that climate change is a serious concern for the public and is a top priority for the new administration, and companies stand ready to collaborate on efforts to reduce emissions and their impact on the environment. He noted that New Mexico energy representatives worked closely with Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham on crafting regulations requiring the capture of 98% of methane emissions, and is also working with her administration on other issues, including produced water. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, said that while the state has far less onshore federal land than New Mexico, it is home to significant federal offshore leases that account for 15% of oil production and about 120,000 jobs. Quote, "We hope to have a reasonable conversation on the role oil and gas plays and how we can provide cleaner energy and not rely on government policies that hurt the industry and cost jobs, as well as billions in revenues that fund schools, healthcare, first responders, and infrastructure," he said. Phasing out oil and gas when there is no alternative undermines not only the environmental gains the industry has made, but undermines the national security and energy security, Staples said. Quote, "We understand society has concerns about the climate," he said, "but the choice does not have to be one or the other. We can have an all-of-the-above energy policy that grows the economy, creates jobs, and protects the environment," end quote. Companies like EOG Resources have been taking out drilling permits recently in New Mexico in advance of the expected moratorium. EOG Resources Chief Operating Officer Billy Helms explained during a November Bernstein conference that that, quote, "We've had a history of working with different administrations and any potential regulations, and will continue to do that. When it comes to access to federal lands, that's one of the things we're not really worried about in our business. We have a lot of potential outside of federal land, too. So we take comfort in the fact we have a pretty robust inventory already on non-federal land. And our exploration efforts are adding to that inventory on non-federal land all the time," end quote. EOG officials said that while the federal leases are important, they still have to compete with the rest of the company's portfolio. Flynn said one of the negative impacts of the moratorium is that even when companies like EOG Resources have drilling permits, they still need other permits, say for pipelines, to take away the oil or capture the natural gas. With the moratorium, he said, decision-making has been taken away from the field offices, like the Bureau of Land Management Office in Carlsbad, and moved up the chain of command to Department of the Interior offices in Washington, D.C. That has essentially frozen decisions, slowing or halting development. Quote, "That has an impact today, even if you've leased all the land you want or received drilling permits," he said. Summers, Flynn, and Staples were joined by Jessica Sanders, 2019 New Mexico Teacher of the Year and President of the New Mexico Science Teachers Association, Tyler Gray, President of the Louisiana Mid-Continent Oil and Gas Association, Pete Obermuller, President of the Petroleum Association of Wyoming, and Jim Willicks, Wyoming County Commissioners Association President, to discuss the economic and social impact of the moratoriums on their states and professions. Report: Conaway to start lobbying firm. Politico is reporting that former Congressman Mike Conaway will start a lobbying firm. The Midlander, who left Washington as the ranking member and former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee and had served as chair of House Ethics Committee, will launch the lobbying and reputation management firm alongside his former chief of staff, Scott Graves, according to Politico. Quote, "The Conaway Graves Group will handle a broad range of issues, according to a press release cited in the report, but will focus on agriculture, energy, intelligence, and defense." Politico also reported that federal law requires Conaway to take a year-long period away from Congress before lobbying his former colleagues. Conaway represented Texas District 11, which includes Midland and Odessa, from 2005 through 2020. George W. Bush Childhood Home may become National Park. The National Park Service held a virtual public meeting Tuesday to discuss the process of designating the George W. Bush Childhood Home as a national park. The Bush family, including two presidents, George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush, and First Lady Barbara Pierce Bush, lived in the home between November 1951 and November 1955. Former U.S. Representative Mike Conaway of Midland requested that the NPS conduct a Renaissance survey of the Bush home in 2012, according to Carrie Miller, a project manager for the NPS Denver Service Center. That survey evaluated the location's potential as a new unit of the NPS. In 2019, Congress authorized the Secretary of the Interior to conduct a special resource study of the home, which will determine if the space, currently a museum and historical landmark, is eligible to become a national park, Miller said during Tuesday's meeting. To be eligible, a site must be nationally significant, suitable, feasible as an NPS unit, and require direct management by the NPS. The study is expected to be completed by spring of 2022, with the final report submitted to the Secretary of the Interior and Congress by the end of that year. Congress or the President can opt to designate the site as a national park. quote, "When the study is fully approved and submitted and the Secretary transmits it to Congress, it's in Congress's hands," Miller said. "There are many cases where nothing happens because Congress just chooses not to take congressional action through legislation. At that point, there is no timeline. There is no deadline," end quote. She said Congress can act at any time to approve a site as a national park, or the President can do so using the Antiquities Act. The home is currently owned and managed by the George W. Bush Childhood Home Incorporated, a nonprofit that provides tours and educational programs to the public. If the site is designated as a national park, it could take a year or more to transfer ownership from the nonprofit to NPS, Miller said. She said it could also take several years before the unit is fully staffed and operational. The Bush home is located at 1412 West Ohio Avenue in a residential neighborhood. The practicality of designating a site in a residential area as a national park will be evaluated during the feasibility phase of the special resource study, Miller said. Quote, "A lot of outreach would happen by the National Park Service to try to facilitate a smooth transition in that scenario if it's designated as a national park," she said. The Bush site would not be the only home of a former president to be selected as a national park. Lyndon B. Johnson's ranch and final resting place was designated as a national park in 1980. The NPS is accepting public comment on the Bush home potential designation through February. Comments can be submitted at parkplanning.nps.gov/GW Bush. Plays on display. Curtain goes up on celebration of MCT. Midland County Historical Museum highlights rich history of Art Cole and decades of Midland Community Theater history. The story was written by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Historical Society has worked with the Midland Community Theater to create an exhibit celebrating the history of MCT. Last year would have been MCT's 75th anniversary, but celebration plans and some plays were put on hold due to the pandemic. Society President Jim Collette said the exhibit has taken some time due to funding, then the museum being closed because of the pandemic and other delays. The Society first started working on bringing all the resources together in October 2019. He expects the exhibit will open at the Downtown Museum at 200 North Main Street at the beginning of February. Quote, "I'm a historian by avocation, and I have written two books on Midland," Collette said. "However, I'm not an actor, and I didn't know a lot about theater. It has been fun to learn so much about MCT and see their archives that feature all their plays and programs," end quote. The exhibit heavily focuses on MCT founder Art Cole, who was also executive director for 37 years. At the beginning of the exhibit, there is a replica of Art Cole's desk with programs and sketches that he made. Quote, "Art Cole was a class to himself," Collette said. "He was an actor, he was a director, obviously an artist, and had great technical skills. He was also great at selling the plays. How many people can do all of those skills?" End quote. Cole also created miniature 3D models of how sets should look, and MCT saved the miniatures. Models from plays such as Hello, Dolly, A Delicate Balance, and Rodgers and Hart, A Musical Celebration, are on display at the Midland County History Museum. There is also information about how Cole and his wife Ruth met Princess Grace Kelly of Monaco. MCT has had three executive directors in its history, and sections about past executive director Don Bachman and current executive director Tim Jepson also will be part of the exhibit. Quote, "The Midland Community Theater set people actually built some of the walls which mimic what a backstage area would look like," Collette said. "When we open, We would like any volunteers of MCT to sign their names on the white walls and how they participated in different shows. We will also have a couple of journals where people can put their thoughts, and those will become a permanent piece of our history." End quote. He said he hopes the backstage wall will be filled up to show the power of volunteers supporting community theater. Of course, MCT's biggest fundraiser, Summer Mummers, is featured throughout with a TV playing scenes from old plays, Summer Mummer programs, and a life-size cutout of Gigi, the card lady, who held the position for 20-some years.
Hello, this is Michael, reading an additional article from the Midland Reporter Telegram Inside Pages. Thursday, January 28th. Numbers increasing at Midland vaccination site, from staff reports. The number of people vaccinated through the mass vaccination program at the Horseshoe topped 2,000 through Tuesday, according to statistics from Midland Health. Midland Health reported 251 on Friday, the soft opening at the facility, followed by 858 on Monday and 978 on Tuesday. Officials said they were hoping to accommodate around 1,000 a day as mass vaccinations continue. The program involves people registering with Midland Health and then coming in when their appointment time takes place. Midland Health officials stated earlier this week there were, as of Tuesday morning, 7,000 people scheduled to get their vaccines at the mass vaccination site and another 8,000 more on a waiting list. In Odessa, they administered close to 1,700 vaccines on Wednesday, according to the Medical Center Health System Facebook page, and around 6,500 through 4 days of at its vaccination site at Ratliff Stadium. The city of Midland on Wednesday also reported two more COVID-19-related deaths. Both were males in their 60s with underlying health conditions. One passed away January 18th, the other on Tuesday. The number of Midland County residents that have died during the pandemic because of coronavirus is up to 219.
Royal Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aquarius and a moon in Leo. Happy birthday for Thursday, January 28, 2021. Pioneering, strong-willed and daring, you're capable of extraordinary achievements. This year, you go where no one has gone before, and you achieve outstanding success through sheer guts and determination. If single, you're attracted to a challenge, but it might be better to look before you leap. Otherwise, commitment is years away. If attached, this year promises bliss. You and your partner frolic, play, and laugh together. Libra adores you. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. You dislike and almost fear being alone. Love trends are definitely improving. You will be liberated from old heartaches or disappointments. A spiritual connection with a special love forms. Existing relationships transform for the better. Tonight, relaxing with a loved one. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Repairs and cleaning around your home may require attention. Be patient with less than perfect family situations. Problems will smooth over. A loved one would treasure an unusual gift you created. Your artistic skill peaks now. Tonight, you receive many invitations. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. Today is a perfect time for selling and promotion, as well as study and negotiation. Greater kindness comes from influential people and smooths over age gap differences. Coping with responsibilities becomes second nature. Tonight, answer old emails and calls first. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Today you can benefit from exploring. Return to favorite old haunts. After that, strike out into new territory. This is the start of an especially good time for learning another language. Financial planning will be in your thoughts. Tonight, conversations revolve around work. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Today surrounds you with warmth and success and makes it easy for you to promote beliefs and causes that are meaningful to you. Team spirit is strong. and you enlist the help of associates in realizing goals. Tonight, much online chatting and networking. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Service to those less fortunate or other types of personal sacrifice bring happiness. Virgos have an ancient association with martyrdom. Turn this into a positive by keeping quiet about your good deeds and thinking of others first. Tonight, your good work is rewarded. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. Humor and patience will speed your success today. You will grow through involvement with organizations. Reach out to new groups and rise to the occasion if called upon to fill a leadership role. Tonight, meditate on your greatest dreams and wishes and prioritize them. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Your natural dignity and self-control help you gracefully balance your domestic life with your professional persona. There are important synchronicities unfolding. Your timely response will turn any negative attention into positive recognition. Tonight, let go of the status quo. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 4 stars. Your enthusiasm and energy are high. Studies and conversations generate agreeable ideas and experiences. Your perpetual zest for the novel and intriguing is fulfilled. You will be a bit restless. Tonight, get both sides of the story if there is disturbing news. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. You will be able to combine work with recreation and social life today. Friends suggest future travel and invite you to share in their projects and interests. A new romantic involvement delights and surprises you. Tonight, be understanding and accepting. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 2 stars. There may be some tensions to resolve with a close associate. An opposition can bring some arguments and competition. Don't let a burst of anger become destructive. If you overcome stubbornness, a satisfactory compromise may be developed. Tonight, chill. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 2 stars. Be sensitive to health messages sent by your body now. You are about to begin a strong Saturn cycle that will bring consequences if you have developed poor health, including mental health, habits in the past. Tonight, be good and gentle to yourself. Born today, actress Ariel Winter, 1998, writer Colette, 1873, artist Alice Neal, 1900.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, January 28th. Alice Rita Schlegel, age 91, left this world on January 24th to join her departed husband of 70 years, Lieutenant Colonel Robert C. Schlegel. She is survived by her daughter Trudy Ray, son-in-law Dr. Stephen Ray, son Bobby Schlegel, and daughter-in-law Donita. She leaves behind numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, nieces, and nephews. Her journey began on July 12, 1929 in Santa Rita, Texas, where she would acquire her name from the first oil well drilled in the Permian Basin. Her early years were spent in Tucson, Texas, graduating from high school from Big Lake. The family will receive friends on Friday, January 29th from 5 to 7 p.m., at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Saturday, January 30th at 12:30 p.m. in the Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Live streaming will be available at www.npwelch.com. A private family burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial donations be made to Alamo Heights Baptist Church, or the Hospice Foundation of America. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Bobby Gilman Wilson, age 78, of Midland, went home to be with his wife and his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ on Monday, January 18th. Viewing will be Friday, January 29th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and the family will be receiving friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Saturday, January 30th at 2 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel, with Pastor David McReynolds officiating. Interment will follow at Resthaven Memorial Park. Bobby was born in January 1942 to the late Claude and Elizabeth Wilson in Brownfield, Texas, but he was raised and educated in Midland. Bobby was preceded in death by his parents and by his wife, a brother, E.L. Wilson, daughters, Jenny Lewis and Tammy Jenkins. He is survived by his sons, Mark Wilson, Tommy Wilson, and Terry Wilson of Murrieta, California, and David Lewis of Midland, daughters May Moore and Mary Howell of Midland, a sister, Dwayne Sally Castleberry of Midland, 20 grandchildren and several great-grandchildren, and some great-great-grandchildren. The family would like to express their gratitude to Midland Memorial Hospital for their efforts for their tender loving care and support during our father's illness. Funeral services are under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Elizabeth Ann Cadell, age 75, went home to be with her Lord and Savior on December 21, 2020, after a long illness. Ann was born on May 11, 1945, in Winters, Texas, to Robert Lee Lale and Alpha Maples Lale. She was the youngest of four daughters. Ann was employed as a secretary in the Trust Department of Texas American Bank for many years. She and her husband were also owners of Lee's Plumbing and Heating Service. In addition to her husband, Ann was also preceded in death by her parents and three sisters, Latane Hedrick, Layla Brooks, and Joyce Boulding. Henry Mack McDowell, age 80, of Midland, passed away on Monday, January 25th in Andrews. Family and friends will gather to celebrate his life at 2 p.m. on Friday, January 29th, at the Magnet Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow in the Andrews North Cemetery. Please visit www.magnetfuneralhome.com for obituary information, visitation, service details, and family pictures or videos. Henry was born on August 30, 1940, in Transylvania, Louisiana, to John Rannell and Edna Truett McDowell. He married Madonna Fugit on April 29, 1961, in Dodson, Louisiana, and they spent 60 years together. He is survived by his wife, Madonna McDowell of Midland, son Timothy E. McDowell, and wife Deanne of Andrews, daughters Tony Versleys of Freeport, Michigan, as well as several grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that you make a donation to St. Jude's Children's Hospital at www.stjude-.org. James Patrick Pat Harris, age 63, of Mertzon, Texas, went home to be with the Lord on Saturday, January 23rd. He was surrounded by his family as he peacefully passed after bravely battling progressive muscular atrophy. Pat was born in Salt Lake City, Utah, to Elaine Tunnell and Jim Harris. He spent the early part of his childhood in Midland until his family moved to Brownwood, Texas, where he graduated from high school in 1976. Pat began his professional career as an independent petroleum landman and later transitioned into the pharmaceutical industry. Pat is survived by his wife of 38 years, Cindy Harris of Mertzon, son and daughter-in-law Parker and Lee Harris of Houston, daughter and son-in-law Brady and Taylor Bradshaw of Evergreen, Colorado, sister and brother-in-law Holly and Bill Welsh of Pioneer, Tennessee, and many other beloved relatives. Pat was preceded in death by his father and mother, and his aunt and uncle, Carlotta, and Bud Hartman of San Angelo. Visitation will be held on Saturday, January 30th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Harper Funeral Home in San Angelo, followed by a graveside service at 2 p.m. at Sherwood Cemetery in Sherwood, Texas. Family and friends can share online condolences at www.harper-funeralhome.com. Michael Joaquin Jones, a resident of Breckenridge, Texas, returned to heaven on January 20th. The meaning of the name Michael is a gift from God, and for those fortunate enough to know. He lived a life of integrity, honor, service, and love. Michael was a patriot, decorated Army veteran, and airborne ranger. He is survived by his five children, Justice, Moses, Samuel, Sarah, and Rachel, as well as five grandchildren, Phoenix, Ramsey, Zoe, Evan, and Lila, and his brother and sisters, Laura, Mary Ann, Yvonne, Martha, Cecilia, Earl, and Richard. Stephen Lewis Shelton of San Angelo passed away at his home on Wednesday, January 20th, at the age of 73, after a battle with his health. Funeral services were held on Monday, January 25th, at the First Baptist Church of Grosbeck, with Dr. Keith Collier officiating. Burial followed at Falconberry Cemetery by his parents and sister, and with military honors provided by the U.S. Air Force. Stephen was born July 4, 1947, in Gladewater, to William Lewis Shelton and Emmy Marzell Davis Shelton. He grew up in Midland and graduated from high school, where he had attended school with Tommy Lee Jones and Laura Welch Bush. He attended Odessa College for 2 years before he joined the U.S. Air Force. He is survived by his daughter, Teresa Shelton of San Angelo, and her children, Matthew Sellers and Vanessa Ponder, a daughter, Christina Hamilton of Seminole, and her children, Christopher Hamilton and Leanne Swanlaw, and son and daughter-in-law, Terry and Christy Shelton of San Angelo, and their children, Travis Shelton and Kaylee Shelton, and also three great-grandchildren. Also surviving are his sister and brother-in-law, Donna and Dennis Chapman of Nacogdoches, and brother and sister-in-law, Kevin and Tammy Shelton of Midland. Montserrat Mons Bernal, age 81 of Midland, passed away Thursday, January 21st. Viewing will be Thursday, January 28th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and a prayer service starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Graveside service is set for Friday, January 29th at 10 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by three sons, Hermenegildo Oviedo, Jaime Oviedo, and Ruben Oviedo, and two daughters, Bertha Barragan and Lorena Vargas, two sisters, 14 grandchildren, and 8 great-grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 28th, 2021. Front page. Stop the spread, wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Abbott talking oil and gas today in Odessa. Photo, Governor Greg Abbott takes part in a roundtable discussion on public safety and law enforcement last Thursday in Austin. The photo is of Governor Abbott. Eric Gay, The Associated Press. OA News at OAOA.com, Austin. Governor Greg Abbott will hold a roundtable discussion today in Odessa about the Texas economy and the oil and gas industry. Following the discussion, Governor Abbott will hold a brief press conference scheduled for 12:15 p.m. at Cud Energy Services, located at 1300 South JBS Parkway. The press release detailed that Governor Abbott will hear during the roundtable from oil and gas workers, energy leaders, and advocates on how Texas can continue to support the oil and gas industry and its workers in the wake of COVID-19, as well as how to ensure a more prosperous future for the state of Texas. On Wednesday, the Associated Press reported that President Joe Biden issued executive orders to cut oil, gas, and coal emissions and double energy production from offshore wind turbines. The orders target federal subsidies for oil and other fossil fuels and halt new oil and gas leases on federal lands and waters. They also aim to conserve 30% of the country's lands and ocean waters in the next 10 years and move to an all-electric federal vehicle fleet. "We can't wait any longer to address the climate crisis," Biden said at the White House. "We see with our own eyes, we know it in our bones, it is time to act." He said his orders will supercharge our administration's ambitious plan to confront the existential threat of climate change. Biden has set a goal of eliminating pollution from fossil fuel in the power sector by 2035. Volunteers step up. Volunteer Jolynn Gray waves to a vehicle as she directs traffic to an observation area after they received the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine at the mass vaccination clinic Wednesday at Ratliff Stadium. Gray began volunteering on Tuesday with friends. Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Odessans show up in big way. Vaccine effort helped by locals who are pitching in. By Michael Bauer, MBAUER at OAOA.com. The combined efforts of the City of Odessa and Medical Center Hospital this week resulted in more than 6,000 COVID-19 vaccines being administered at Ratliff Stadium during a mass clinic. That impressive number is fueled by not only those city and MCH workers, but also by a volunteer force of Odessans. The mass vaccination effort has allowed Permian Basin residents to receive the first dose of the Pfizer vaccine in the fight against the coronavirus pandemic. Helping to make sure that everything goes as smooth as possible has not only been the MCH staff, city workers, Odessa police, along with paramedics and fire and rescue, but also countless volunteers. MCH Director of Public Relations Trevor Tankersley said the clinic continues today, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., gate shuts at 2 p.m., and that the volunteers have made a huge difference. "We want to give a massive thank you to all who have volunteered their time so far out at the stadium," Tankersley said in an email. The vaccination effort, which started Sunday, has had more than 120 volunteers each day. Two more photos. Top, Medical Center Hospital volunteer Lucas Ochoa directs traffic to an observation area after they received the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine at the mass vaccination clinic Wednesday at Ratliff Stadium. Above, volunteer Jolynn Gray waves to a vehicle as she directs traffic to an observation area after they received the COVID-19 Pfizer vaccine at the mass vaccination clinic Wednesday at Ratliff Stadium. "It's been great," Volunteer Resource Coordinator Austin Yoakum said. "We've had a great showing in our volunteers. We're upwards of about 120 a day. We are keeping them fed and plugging them in. We have volunteers used for on the non-medical side, like flagging, traffic control. We have some clinical volunteers, paramedics, nurses, and even some doctors. They're helping out with assisting our paramedics in tents giving vaccinations. The jobs volunteers at the Ratliff Stadium parking lot have been doing include directing traffic to help people get in their correct lanes to receive the vaccine, to getting the correct information from people, including birth dates. Non-clinical, we'll put them in traffic and getting our cars moving to the right lanes that they need to," Yoakum said. "Clinical personnel, they can assist with vaccinations and helping out with the paperwork and band-aids." Among the 120 volunteers on Wednesday included Odessa resident Nancy Parra, who was on her first day of volunteering, who said she would be back for today's effort. "This is my vacation week," Parra said. "I did not realize that I could volunteer until about 2 days ago. Then I put my application in so that they could use me wherever they wanted. Para works at Midland Memorial Health as a surgical technologist. She says working in her field is one of the biggest reasons that she came out to volunteer. I've been in the medical world for almost 15 years, and I just enjoy it, Para said. I enjoy helping people. I don't mind volunteering. I've done it before, just never for the pandemic. I had the vacation week off and thought, well, why not? Her job has also helped her gain the right training that's needed in a vaccination effort. I know how to help out with patients and understand when they're afraid and answer questions. If I don't know, I make sure to get the right answer, Para said. Para's job on Wednesday was to go from car to car, getting information that's needed. I was the runner, Para said. I was collecting names and birth dates so they could enter it into the computer before they got their injections. All in all, her first day volunteering went well. It was pretty good, Para said. I learned how to spell out names and met a lot of interesting people. I will be paired up with a paramedic so that they can give the injection, and I'll take the information from the patient, Para said. Another volunteer was Midland resident Jolene Gray, who helped direct traffic inside the parking lot at Ratliff Stadium. For her, volunteering in the community has always been important. I think this is a great cause, Gray said. I hope everyone gets vaccinated. I just like to support what's going on in the community. Wednesday was Gray's second day volunteering, arriving at around 7:30 a.m. and staying until around 2:30 p.m. Gray wasn't alone, as she came in a group, with two of her friends also volunteering. We're always volunteering, Gray said. My friend got an email, and then she called me about volunteering, and we signed up. One thing Para and Gray have noticed is the laid-back attitude from people waiting in the long line to receive their vaccination. It's been very friendly, Para said. Everybody's been friendly, from people getting it to this side of it. Everyone has been great. Gray echoed those thoughts. Everyone's been really nice, and they've been really grateful, Gray said. It's really fun. People are pretty good. Being at the end, I get a lot of thank yous and waves. It's been fantastic. I think people are really excited to have this opportunity to come here and do it. Yoakum had nothing but praise for those who have helped out this week. Without our volunteers, we couldn't operate, Yoakum said. Yoakum said that every day about 120 volunteers are needed, including next week. Next week's vaccination days are not yet decided, but likely will be mid to late week at Ratliff Stadium. Para says she hopes to come back to help out in the upcoming weeks. I'm hoping that if they have more the next week, I'll come back every Wednesday, Para said. Those who are interested in volunteering can send an email to volunteers@odessatx.gov. Crisis Center podcasts aim to inform public. By Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. With COVID-19 still raging, Crisis Center of West Texas has thought of a way to communicate with the community that doesn't involve face-to-face interaction, but still provides information. Every 2 weeks, Celia Arsuaga, Prevention Education Specialist, and Aaron Thomas, Restart BIPP Coordinator, have a conversation about issues such as toxic masculinity, the roots of sexual assault, different types of domestic violence, and some high-profile domestic violence cases. BIPP stands for Battering Intervention and Prevention Program. January is Stalking Awareness Month, so they have tackled that as well. The podcasts are available on Spotify, Google, and Apple Podcasts. Arsuaga said she and Thomas have conversations with each other to avoid their talks sounding scripted or lecture-y. They select topics based on social media, the media, movies that are popular right now, the culture surrounding domestic violence, or movements surrounding domestic violence or sexual assault. We try to have very honest and vulnerable conversations about them, Arsuaga said. When stalking first appeared, Arsuaga said a lot of people called it star stalking, where people would stalk celebrities. But then activists within the domestic violence movement linked the cause domestic violence to the concern of stalking and argued that people attempting to leave an abusive relationship, they would often try to get restraining orders against their partners, and that's when the stalking would begin and would become really dangerous, she said. She noted that 76% of women murdered by an intimate partner were stalked first. With all the technology available today, it has made stalking that much easier, Arsuaga said. She added that once things become more normal, she thinks they will continue the podcasts. Although they are involved in domestic violence and sexual assault prevention, Arsuaga said they are in no way experts. We're also learning along with you. That's how we want our podcast listeners to feel, so I think this is something that we'll continue to do. Podcasts have become more popular, so that enables people to put one on while they're driving to work or while they're cooking. It's being able to listen whenever you want, when you're ready to listen and have these conversations. That is something unique to the podcast, Arsuaga said. Thomas said they want to take a holistic approach in the podcasts. It's financial abuse if someone's holding money back from you, verbal, mental, emotional, and not just physical. You want to have conversations about what that looks like and what can be done in order to get out of a situation if you are in one, Thomas said. People have told him that the information on the podcasts is great and it has given them a new perspective on things. He and Arsuaga do the podcasts over Zoom. Thomas added that time moves fast when they're creating the podcasts. We have to pay attention and cut it off at a certain time. We don't want to make it too long. We try to give ourselves like an hour and 10 minutes, knowing that there's going to be some editing. So we try to push out a 30 to 45 minute podcast every 2 weeks, Thomas said. On the net, ccwtx.org. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine through the drive-thru clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main entrance. Clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates will close at 2 p.m. today. The clinic will be closed Friday. Next week's clinic will be posted soon. Clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B most at risk and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those that are not able to register online, will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th Street, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/y3jqhz89. Walgreens are expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. For more updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/y3lnw83. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores will soon have the no-cost COVID-19 vaccine available. They will administer in a phased approach based on state guidelines when available to pharmacies. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/y508qje4. From staff reports. 363 days. For 363 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Closing prices. Posted, $49.33. Futures, $52.85. Natural gas, $2.76. Benchmark U.S. rose 24 cents to $52.85 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 28th, 2021. Page 2 read. Morning treats, photos. The Medical Center Hospital Auxiliary in Jumburrito treated volunteers to breakfast and hot coffee prior to the opening of the community drive-thru COVID-19 vaccination clinic on Wednesday at Ratliff Stadium. Photos courtesy of Pamela Andrews, President MCH Auxiliary. Odessa American for Thursday, January 28, 2021. Local News Roundup. Community Art Day. Ella Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a free and safe Community Art Day from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Attendees will be able to tour newest exhibition, Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashion, watch demo activities centered around printmaking and handmade valentines. For more information, call Ashley Flores at 550-9696, extension 214, or email marketing@noelartmuseum.org, or visit www.noelartmuseum.org. Online presentation. The Commemorative Air Force has scheduled Warbird Tube, flying the Spitfire from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. February 3rd. Follow CAF pilot Charles Scott Williams on the flight controls as he takes you back in time for a flight in the Supermarine Spitfire. The free online event will be presented at tinyurl.com/yx9k9n25. Visit tinyurl.com/y5PLHAH5. OA News at OAOA.com. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, January 28th, 2021. Local and State. Health Sciences Naming Agreement Official. Photo. President and CEO of Medical Center Hospital, Russell Tippin, answers questions regarding the MCH Simulation Hospital, announced to be a part of Odessa College's new Wood Health Sciences Building Wednesday afternoon during a press conference at the Salisbury Campus Center. Eli Hartman, Odessa American. OA News at OAOA.com. The new Wood Health Sciences Building, planned for opening in fall 2023 at Odessa College, will feature the Medical Center Health System Simulation Hospital, which officials said will reduce the time it takes to train healthcare workers and enhance care for Permian Basin residents in the future. The announcement of Medical Center Health System's commitment of a $5 million investment over a 10-year period was made in the foyer of the Salisbury Campus Center Wednesday and live-streamed on Facebook. Plans are to break ground on the $39.7 million, 83,000-square-foot, four-story building in late 2021. The simulation hospital will span the entire first floor of the Wood Health Sciences building and will be equipped with state-of-the-art technology to simulate patient care scenarios. The simulation hospital will provide a collaborative environment for all health sciences students that will include the following suites: emergency room, operating room, labor and delivery, nursery, physical therapy, and radiological technology. The simulation hospital will also include 5 high simulation patient rooms, 5 doctor's office simulation rooms, and 10 basic simulation patient rooms, a news release said. Medical Center Hospital President and Chief Executive Officer Russell Tippin said the hospital board has been behind the project since it was introduced a couple of months ago. Board members David Dunn, Bryn Dodd, Don Hallmark, and Ben Quiroz were on hand. A rendering of the new building was placed near the podium where officials made their remarks. "We cannot be any more excited about this project than we are today, and when you look at pictures like this, what a partnership to have with Odessa College and Medical Center Health System. It only makes sense that this comes together to get these healthcare workers in our hospital and in surrounding hospitals to make sure that we have the staff necessary and trained correctly to take care of our patients in the future," Tippin said. "We are very excited to hitch our wagon to Odessa College because we know they crank out top-notch students and future employees for us. When you start talking about nurses, you start talking about physical therapists, you start talking about lab techs, physical therapy aides, x-ray techs, respiratory therapists, that's everything we need at Medical Center," he added. When the idea for the building came to the hospital, Tippin said they knew it was something they wanted to be part of to improve health care in Ector County in the Permian Basin. In terms of nurses and respiratory therapists, Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Timmons said Medical Center has upward of 100 positions open. "This facility, working very closely with Odessa College, is going to bring us those experienced individuals. We cannot wait for that day to come. This also helps us on the medical center side. This simulation center is going to impact not just our clinical providers, but the care that our patients receive, because they are now going to be allowing us to come as clinical providers, physicians, residents, over here to use the simulation center in order to enhance our skills," Timmons said. Tippin said MCH's payroll is $160 million a year if every spot is full. "If not," he said, "it takes more funding because of contract labor costs." Timmons said an average travel nurse today costs her between $150 and $175 an hour, and many of them work 12 to 14-hour shifts. "You work a 7-day rotation, so it's really pretty calculable," Timmons said. Another benefit of the simulation hospital is that it is expected to reduce training time for those who go to work at MCH. Timmons said it takes 4 to 6 weeks to train a respiratory therapist after they get out of school, and it takes a good 6 to 8 weeks for a nurse. "That's just working a general medical floor. Now, if you go into critical care, it takes an average of 12 weeks in order to train a nurse from the time they leave school. So this building could really help decrease that time by weeks if we really partner the correct way," Timmons added. Tippin said it will ultimately end up saving the taxpayers money because they will be able to keep the money here and not pay contract rates. He added that the Medical Center Health System Foundation and Auxiliary have agreed to offer the hospital help with its financial commitment to the new building. The Wood Family Foundation committed $5 million to the building's construction in December 2020. A news release issued Wednesday said the simulated learning environment will enable students enrolled in certain OC Health Sciences programs to complete 50% of their required clinical hours by caring for simulation mannequins in the simulation hospital and 50% in a hospital or nursing home setting. The new health sciences building's additional space and technology will allow OC to add more programs and accept more students into the School of Health Sciences and continuing education programs, the release said. MCH, mchodessa.com, Odessa College, odessa.edu.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.